Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, from Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile November until opening day. Suffering baseball withdrawal around the clock. When April comes, hey, meet me down on Yawkey Way. That's when Red Sox Nation starts rock. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam,
good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball as well as MLB-wide hot stove. For everyone staying up late tonight on Periscope, as always, the podcast can be found on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Player FM, and literally wherever you can find it on Google. We are available basically everywhere. So whatever app you like to listen to your podcasts on, pull us up. And if you want to do us a huge favor, give us a rating and a review, and that drastically improves our visibility. I am Terry Cushman and am joined as always by Jeremy Schilling and tonight Chris Saunders. How are you, gentlemen?
Good, thanks.
Good. As we were saying just literally about 30 seconds ago, I feel a little bit rusty. It's probably the longest I've gone without doing one, and I think it's been about 3 weeks. We were set to do one, and then I started to feel under the weather. And Jeremy, I know you had some issues with that, between then and now. And have you caught the bug yet, Chris? Have you barfed your brains out?
Knock on wood, I haven't, but I've been trying to take care of myself, making sure I get proper rest, eat healthy, and, just try to do everything I can, because if my voice goes, so does everything else, because I broadcast a lot, especially now.
That would be a problem, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. It doesn't sound very good if your voice is shot. I can tell you that much.
Right. Absolutely. What if you had one of those, voice things for your neck,
Stephen Hawking here?
What's that?
Are you trying to send Chris into the Stephen Hawking mode, for Christ's sake?
Well, I just,
Jesus, Terry. I mean, I know you're rusty, but I mean, come on.
I did kind of, it happened late, and I just realized I shouldn't be saying that because I'm going to offend some people. But because I try not to do, I might be like, the Yankees suck, and then people get offended, or I might say some mean shit about Pedroia or Price, and that's fine. But I don't want to make fun of people's disability. I probably have a mental disability anyway. So So thanks for coming on. Christmas is out of the way. We're now in the same calendar year as the next season. So, I think things are, inching closer to opening day. still do not have the big two free agents signed, and Manny Machado is the big one getting kicked around right now. Chris, let's start with you since your team's more directly connected to him. If you had to put a percentage on it, what are the chances he ends up in New York?
I mean, right now, from what I've seen between New Year's Eve with him following and then unfollowing, you know, Twitter accounts and players and such, and just all the drama that's gone into it, I mean, I think it's definitely over 50%. I've seen tweets from people saying he's definitely going to be a Yankee. Then I've seen other writers say he's definitely going to be a Philly. I mean, in all honesty, I don't think anybody really knows until actually he signs, and then you can go from there. But I would say the percentage is probably above 50. If I had to put a number on it exactly, I'll say it's around 65 to 70.
Wow, pretty confident. And Jeremy is about 99%, if I'm not mistaken.
Hey, Terry, don't put words in my mouth, please. Okay.
It was an educated guess.
I'm at 100%. It is a certainty.
Okay.
Will happen. And if any of you clowns that think that it's not going to happen are out of your goddamn mind.
All right. Well, I'm not against it happening. I think it would be great for the rivalry, as I'm sure you guys would agree. And I just feel like adding that salary, you know, being a Yankee hater, it just kind of complicates things, you know, maybe not immediately for the Yankees, but in the coming years, depending on how that contract is structured. But I'm not sold on it. You know, at this point, I'm just not. And Chris, am I correct that the Yankees have kind of gone on record saying they will not go more than 8 years, and they will not exceed 300,000. 300,000, 300 million. Excuse me. There's the rust. Yeah,
no, the Yankees have said multiple times they will not surpass 300 million, and they won't go beyond 8-9 years. So, and I think the Yankees will stand by that. And I know the Yankees in the past, you could say, are maybe, you know, maybe in a certain way, trying to, you know, pull the rug from under us. But as you've seen with Cashman many times, he's shown that he will stick by not going past a certain amount of years and dollars because he sees a bigger picture with the team. And that's why I feel like in certain aspects, if he's going to sign with the Yankees, I don't know if this will happen, but I said this last week when I was on the radio up in Torrington that if he was to sign a 5-year, $200 million contract with a couple opt-outs in between, it's a win for both sides. The Yankees will get a guy for at least a couple years and give them premier third base and then worry about Andujar and then eventually maybe move him back, depending on what happens with Machado. And then he has opt-outs where if Machado wants to opt out and try to get more money, he could very well surpass $300 million, either in the duration of that first contract or opting out and then trying to get more. So it's just a matter of, does he want to take the risk and gamble on himself, or does he want the sure thing and get the money? Because you know the Phillies will offer $300 million. So if he signs with New York, he's going to be taking less money.
Yeah, and his agent is Dan Lozano. Some notable clients of his, Albert Pujols, Joey Votto. Mike Piazza was one of his earlier bigger clients in the late 90s, early 2000s. But with Pujols and Votto, those are two of the biggest contracts in the history of Major League Baseball. Probably, I'm guessing, around top 10 to top 15, if even that. They might even be closer to top 5. There just hasn't been that many contracts of that magnitude signed. And here are just a couple of my concerns. The players' union is already on edge, and they have been since last season. It just seems like a stretch to me that Lozano is just going to go ahead and just send send Machado to the Yankees and potentially screw up the market for maybe Harper, maybe Betts, maybe Trout in a couple of years. And I just feel like there has to be communication between him and the players' union. Boris has probably been in contact with him saying, hey, don't screw it up for my guy here. You know, do the right thing. And I just can't see him going to the Yankees for less money. And this isn't going to be the offseason, I don't think, where everything suddenly changes. I think they're going to fight like hell to try to get things back on course. You know, and, you know, maybe they never will fully, but I just can't see him going to the second highest bidder. But Jeremy, go ahead. I'm sure you want to weigh in.
If he was going to go to the highest bidder, he would have already done it by now. It's something I've said now for a month.
But you can put the shoe on the other foot and say, why? Well, if he wants New York and he knows their parameters, why hasn't he done that as well?
Because he's attempting to leverage the other opportunities into more money out of New York. And because he probably hasn't even started working out yet, he's not in a rush to take away and make a decision he doesn't want. I mean, he's going to New York. As we get closer to this to spring training, the Yankees are going to offer a little bit more. Now, is it going to be a full 2 years or, you know, $5 million per? Probably not. But is it going to be more than what they're offering now? Probably. And that's what he wants. He wants to squeeze every dollar out of it as much as he possibly can. And let me just say this, okay? From someone who is not operating on the same scale as these agents, but understand the attorney-client relationship. You lose your license making decisions for your clients. Now, 9 times out of 10, a client listens to the attorney agent representative because, you know, they don't understand the process. The process is something that the agent attorney representative has done numerous times, understands the market, et cetera, et cetera. But if Manny Machado went to his client and said, I want to sign with the Arizona Diamondbacks for 1 year and $1 million, he has to do it. He's ethically bound by it. He can lose his license not to. So I'm just – look, I get what you're saying. I get there are ancillary factors. I have no doubt that Boris has chimed in and said, don't – you know, do this, do that, whatever. Maybe Boris has even attempted to speak directly with Machado through the agent. I have no idea. And I know the union has – pull and the union representatives have reached out and probably have had meetings with Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, but it just doesn't matter at the end of the day. You know, I mean, free will exists in contracts, in professional contracts. It does. So I sit there and listen, Terry, to you and people on Twitter and media, and listen to them say their agent won't let them do this. The Players Association won't let them do this. Well, guess what? That's not how it works. They have a tremendous amount of pull. They have a tremendous stake in the rest of the league. And for that, they do intermingle into the situation. But at the end of the day, the decision is Manny Machado's, Bryce Harper, or any other free agent out there. It's just how it is, period. End of story.
Well, name
legally, that's how it has to be.
Name a free agent of their magnitude. And I'm not talking about Jason Veritek, who signed a $40, $50 million deal, which is puny compared to what he's going to sign. But give me some precedents here. Give me some precedents of another time where a top-flight free agent took less money.
You just took my best example and said I couldn't use it.
But you can't.
No. Yes, I can, because that's the prime example, and it happened here in our backyard. Now, listen, the other thing is these negotiations and anytime you're talking about, you know, certain parts of contracts and reaching agreements, a lot of the negotiations are agreed upon to be either confidential by the parties or by the state statute. So, for example, where I live in Florida, if you're negotiating a settlement, that process is confidential under a state statute. So I can't come to an agreement and then go out and broadcast the negotiation process. It's a violation of a Florida statute. And look, you know, we're talking antitrust, which I'm going to admit I don't fully understand, because the collective bargaining agreement governs not necessarily state or federal law, although state or federal law will hop in and fill in the blanks, but that's just not how it works. And I don't know. I don't know. I know enough to probably get me in trouble, But to just sit here and say the media, you know, to say that it's a foregone conclusion that the agent, you know, quote unquote, won't let it happen is just, it's wrong. I'm sorry, it's wrong. The player has a factor. And what he is doing, in my opinion, is leveraging the absolute most dollar bills, not a great sentence, admittedly, the highest value he can out of the Yankees. And I'm not saying I'm right, but I feel pretty strongly about it.
No player in nine-figure territory has ever taken less money, has taken a lesser nine-figure contract for another team. You can't name me a player. And, you know, I was in the middle of pulling up. I'm not even going to – Veritek is just not – you're comparing – there's just no comparison there. One's a generational talent, and the other one's not even going to sniff Cooperstown.
Do I have to stay within the sport of baseball? How about Kevin Durant with OKC? How about Tom Brady with the New England Patriots?
Different agents, different unions.
Every time there's something counter to your point, you just dismiss it, including getting out ahead of Veritek. I'm just saying it happens, Terry. I mean, don't create an arbitrary barrier by saying it has to be nine figures. What are you talking about, dude? These are all people trying to make the most amount of money in a very short window for their respective careers. So, I mean, I just gave you five or six examples, and I'm telling you that this is – Manny Machado has a say. Like, his agent isn't going to say, hey, Milwaukee just offered – 12 years and $360 million, that's where you're going. He'd probably say, maybe I'm wrong, he'd probably say, get the fuck out of here. I'm not going to Milwaukee.
We're galaxies apart. So, I mean, we can go back and forth on it all night, but I just don't, there's no point in it. Chris, anything to add?
No, I think, and Terry, I know there's a few times where I agree with you. I think this time I had to disagree. I think Jeremy's right. Whatever Machado wants, he's going to get. If he wants to be a Yankee, even if it's for less money, he's going to be a Yankee. He's wanted to be one. He loves A-Rod. I think he's always wanted to be in the limelight. I know, Tulo, I mean, to, get off topic of Machado and go to Tulo for a quick second. He, in a lot of ways, he idolized Jeter. He wanted to play in New York. Obviously, he didn't because he, was drafted by the Rockies. But as a free agent this year, there were 16 teams that wanted him. 16. And he chose New York knowing that he more than likely would be a regular for at least the first couple months if he could be healthy and then be a platoon guy if and when Didi comes back and Tulo is healthy. And he still chose New York. And I think that shows, A, that he's willing to trust himself, that he feels like he can handle that abuse that the New York media will be, a la what they'll do to Machado if he continues to be that dirty player. But going back to Tulo, I think in a lot of ways he wanted to be a Yankee. He chose to do that. His agent might have said, you might be better off. You might have a better chance to be able to get more or do more for this team. And he's like, no, I want to be a New York Yankee. So if Machado wants to be a Yankee, he's going to be one, and as long as the feelings, are mutual, which they seem to be, he's going to be a Yankee. It's just a matter of, I guess, when.
Tulowitzki, he has to be paid the major league minimum, $550,000. The Red Sox could call up the worst reliever in AAA, and he's going to make the same exact money as Troy Tulowitzki. Literally all 30 teams can absorb that.
That wasn't his point, though. His point was that he was going to go to a team that he was going to be promised a nine innings for 150 games, and instead he chose the Yankees, and he's only promised nine innings for about 75 games.
He had the luxury
of potentially signing Machado.
He had the luxury of choosing, though, and the dollar amount was not going to change. Regardless.
Well, so here's what it comes down to, Chris, okay?
Chris, go ahead. We started – and Jeremy, I'll let you get in after, but finish.
I remember the first podcast I've done with Jeremy and you, this was going way back, and Jeremy talked about how, the off-the-field and the merchandising could kind of equal the money that teams and players, mainly the team, could get. Now, and that's when we talked about Harper. Machado, granted, for what he does with his immature acts and blah, 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 we can talk about that forever. But what he does for the Yankees and that cachet and that name does bring in a lot of money. So in some ways, I'm not the master of contracts. I never will be. I don't know what they're going to read. But it would not shock me if there was a certain, you know, sentence or two that said, if we make X amount from your jersey sales, you will get this amount back. So that could be something that's underneath the contract that he could still get to that $300 million if there's a certain point, you know, reached either on the field or off the field. I don't know. I'm not a master of contracts, but that's why the GMs are GMs and we're here. So,
Jeremy.
Yeah, Chris, you're making valid points, and it's crushing Terry's point. And so he's resigned himself that he's just not going to agree. And his opinion is it's dollar bills, period, end of story. And you're talking about, you know, potentially fits for family members. You know, again, Machado hasn't been shy about his affinity for New York, going back, you know, into the earlier parts of his life. Why the marketability, the dollar, you know, the other things that go with playing for a contender. Like, I'm sorry, I have been on record pretty unambiguously as saying I would have been the athlete that most likely would have taken the highest dollar figure, and I've said that, you know, I'd be the athlete that go into the press conference and they'd be like, hey, you know, why'd you sign with the Patriots when the Cleveland Browns you know, why'd you sign with the Cleveland Browns and the Patriots had also offered you money? And I'd be, they offered me $50 million more dollars. I'm playing for Cleveland. You know, like, that's how I would be. I think I'm self-aware enough to know that. But you can't pretend that a guy who's already made a shitload of money in his life isn't going to consider the other factors when he's looking at where he wants to play. Are you kidding me? If, let's say, the Yankees are 8-280 and the White Sox are 10-300. You can't tell me he can't make that $20 million up in New York and play for a contender for, let's say, 7 of the 10 years of the deal. That's a no-brainer. And is that going to prevent him from trying to get New York closer to that 10-300? Of course not. That's what negotiations are. That's how leverage works. But to just say that it's only about money and to forget all these other factors, I'm sorry. It's irresponsible if that's your opinion. Or I'm sorry, in evaluating an opinion, because these things are factors. They have to be. I harken back to my initial point, which is, look, if it was just about the guy who offered Manny Machado the most money, this thing would be done by now.
Yep. Well, there's no precedence of a player of his magnitude in the sport
of
baseball.
I've already given you six examples.
Jason Veritek, and who were the other five? I mean, come on. Why didn't Patrick Corbin sign with New York? He wanted to be a Yankee. It would have been for $2 or $3 million a year less, but He went to the highest bidder, but he wanted to be a Yankee. He wanted to be a Yankee.
So the human psyche, hold on, Terry. The human psyche is different in baseball than in other professional sports, or just professionalism. Being a professional, whether it's being a doctor or whatever. I mean, to just say that it's some baseball has some carved out some niche to facilitate your point. And
I just gave you an example of a player who wanted to be a Yankee, who took the highest bidder, and I'm just not going to come off the precedence players.
Well, Patrick Corbin is not a Hall of Fame level player.
Final question on this: if it's 270 versus 350, does he still take the 270 with New York versus 350 with Philly?
No. Maybe.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, all right. Well, at least, you know.
I mean, look, I love the hypothetical that is so geared towards your point that it makes it hard to argue the other way. So I get what you're doing. And Terry, look, I know, like, we've done enough. We've done, about 40 to 50 of these things by now together, or probably 30 to 40. Like, I know how you operate, and I respect the hell out of it, and you drive content like crazy for someone. You know, what did you say you were before we got started? A something podcaster. I really like that line. I wish I remembered it.
I said I was a minor league podcaster.
Yeah, minor league podcaster. I like that a lot. I'm going to write that down. So, and I can appreciate your ability to drive content, but you know, this just seems like you're not going to listen to outside arguments or outside discussion, and you're just sitting in your ways, and the hypotheticals are geared towards your conclusion, and you're not allowing, you know, you're not allowing Chris and I to use other examples that facilitate our position. And so, you know, for that reason, I respect that you're gonna take this position. At the end of the day, the podcast that follows these people finally signing will probably be as entertaining when I hopefully get the chance to call you on your bullshit.
Well, you know, I'm not one that won't admit I was wrong when and if that day comes, you know, and I could be, but at this moment on January 2nd or 3rd, whatever today is, I can't see that. I don't see him taking less money overall. You know, an 8-year deal versus a 10-year deal, I can't. So, but that's fine. And give me, you know.
So then how do you remedy the fact that he hasn't signed yet?
Because he's waiting for the market to rise. He already knows the Yankees aren't going more than 8 years. And you know, over, they're staying under $300 million. That team is, they have a third baseman. They have a third baseman. Who by the way, probably, I mean, how many Red Sox players hit 27 bombs last year? Two? You know, so he would have been one of the, not defensively by any means. Well, actually, I mean, we're not gonna really say that Devers or Nunez are great defenders by any means. So, I mean, we're in pretty rough shape at that corner defensively as well. But I just.
So, I mean, now you're talking about how he fits in the lineup and what position he's going to play. I mean, I agree with you. I don't think he – I mean, I've said since day one when we did the prediction podcast, which was like 10 days after the World Series, I predicted that he was going to be a Yankee. And then we also did a segment where we wanted him to go, I believe. Maybe I'm mischaracterizing this. I also said I want him to be a Yankee. My opinion is not based on that. My opinion is based on what I think and what I'm hearing and application of – you know, the facts to where I think he's going to land. Now, I don't think he makes them better. I think he handicaps them tremendously financially. I think he's probably going to end up pushing out Andujar, who is a rising star in this league. I think he just finished second in the Rookie of the Year vote. So, like, I don't think he makes them better. I think if they were smart, they would take that money and either save it for next season or the trade deadline. And go sign pitching because that's where they need help. And Chris, maybe you could chime in here because it's your team. But to me, I don't see signing Machado as being any sort of upside where it's going to result in a significant increase in wins because they are already an elite offensive team. They need pitching.
No, they do. They need pitching badly. I mean, you know, the infield defense alone besides Torres is questionable because Sanchez, we've seen what he is behind the plate. If a ball is rolled to first base, nobody is going to pick it up because Bird and Voit, you know, Voit don't really have a sure bet to get that position at first. Shortstop, yes, Tulo, you know, is an improvement over Tyler Wade, but then again, Tulo also needs to stay on the field. And Andujar, with all the questions about is Machado coming, what's going to happen, you know, how is this going to affect him psychologically? Because I don't know him as a, you know, as a person. So what's all this chatter really going to do with him? And, you know, I was talking with Terry earlier about how the free agent class with the Yankees in 2023 will have Judge, Sanchez, Severino in 22. So there are some guys that they do have to pay. I think they'll pay Severino and Judge before Sanchez. Now, mind you, Judge will be a free agent at age 30. I don't think that will be a big deal because of the way he's built. And, you know, up until now, his injury history has not been bad. But, I mean, who knows? It's still a couple years away. You know, but going back to the point, they do need pitching badly. And, you know, for a lineup that is so right-handed heavy and to lose a guy like Didi who does three things. He's a great defender. He's a left-handed hitter. and he's capable on both sides of the ball. The Yankees, and he has a little bit of speed. The Yankees don't have a lot of speed in that lineup. They're extremely heavily, you know, heavily right-handed, and they have a lot of guys who strike out in that lineup. And Machado, albeit, is a great power hitter. He can do a lot of things with the bat. I respect him for it. But his strikeouts are still high, especially in the postseason. They spiked up. So, and I've said this now for at least a couple months. Getting Machado does not make them that much better than what they were last year. It doesn't make them better than the Red Sox. And in all honesty, it doesn't make them better than Houston, because I still trust Houston's pitching and what they have offensively, because they have a well-rounded team that doesn't rely on the home runs compared to the Yankees. And I'm saying that as a Yankee fan, so that should say a lot.
So, Chris, let me ask you a follow-up question. Mm-hmm. So I think we all agree on that point, and I think most, you know, quote-unquote rational fans feel that way. How much – and I don't listen to, you know, Yankee, you know, broadcasts, and so I honestly don't know. This is not some rhetorical question. Mm-hmm. How much does the brass value Machado as a marketable asset? Because if we feel that way, there's people in the Yankees front office that feels that way, but yet he's still the lead candidate to go to, you know, he's still – New York is the prime landing spot. Mm-hmm. So to me, that has to be because they feel like they can make up the value in the contract in off-field dollar bills. Am I seeing that wrong, or is there some chatter that I haven't heard?
No, you're seeing that right. I think it's a combination of two things. It's what you stated, and it's the fact that the Red Sox won the World Series. If you look at all the times that the Red Sox have won the World Series, that following offseason or going into that offseason, the Yankees have signed A-Rod to a big-time extension. They went out and got Randy Johnson, Jared Wright, and Carl Pavano after the Red Sox won. They signed Jacoby Ellsbury after you guys won back in 13. So they feel that pressure of having to make a big-time move, and I think it comes to a point where they can say that, you know, we needed this, we needed that, you know, but realistically, they don't – I mean, it baffles my mind that there's so many young – and I'm not talking about, like, you know, 40, 50. I'm talking about people my age and a little bit older, because I'm 25, about to be 26 in 2 hours. And, you know, to hear about how – you know, Machado can do this, he can do that, you know, he's better than Andujar. But if you look at the numbers of Andujar, they're, at least for one full season, they're pretty, you know, they're pretty, you know, applicable compared to Machado. So I get that they can make a lot of money off him, off the field and whatnot, but does he help that clubhouse?
When CC's, no, he's a scumbag.
What was that?
No, he doesn't help the clubhouse. He's a scumbag.
Exactly. That's the point. You know, he's a very immature player who, when he gets pissed off, he starts to act like a child. And he's at the age now where he's 26 years old. If he's acting like that at 26, you can't tell me that he's going to change at 28, 29, 30, 31. Because to go back to, you know, I know you mentioned about going to other sports. Odell Beckham, when he was, I think, what was it, a rookie or a second-year guy, he was launching himself into Josh Norman. And nobody on the Giants reprimanded him. So what's happened since then? He continues to act like a diva. So if you the way that Machado's career has gone, he hasn't been handled correctly in terms of being reprimanded. And this is a guy who, you know, perfect example. Look at the Tulo contract. That was a big contract for a shortstop, okay? He's aged, and a lot of injury has come about because of the fact that he's gotten older. And I wonder if it's going to take that in order for Machado to realize, oh, I'm not God's, you know, God's creation. I'm actually not a person who can live through all these injuries. I actually need to mature. And if it takes till then, I'm sorry, but I don't want to deal with a Machado at 33 who's going to be mature and then realize that he needs to be a better, you know, person and player on the field and off the field.
The laziness.
Totally agree on that. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say the laziness is a huge red flag for me. I mean, if he's if he's acting this way before his big contract, what's he going to be like 2 or 3 years into it? You know, not, you know, legging out those doubles and whatnot. And
yep.
I just, yep. I don't know. And
look at Antonio Brown with the Steelers in the last 24 hours.
Great call, Jeremy.
Well, here's an extreme example, and I doubt it would get this bad, but look at Yoenis Cespedes right now. I saw I saw a headline today that said he might not play in 2019 at all. You know, he's still recovering from his heel surgery from, I think, 2017. That's a guy who got paid and doesn't give a fuck. And he was all over Twitter buying these toys, you know, these expensive vehicles. And, you know, and like I said, I'm not saying Machado can get that bad, but we've seen it with Cespedes. We saw it with Sandoval. I mean, how does a guy who had three rings, a former World Series MVP, just fall off a cliff like that? I mean, we can make the fat jokes all day long, but, you know, nobody saw that coming with Sandoval that quickly anyway. And so I just, and just to reiterate, I'm not, just because I really don't think he's going to sign, I'm rooting for it. That's fine. I can deal with Manny Machado still being in the American League East. And, you know, I did a live stream earlier in the week, you know, talking about how dumb it's going to be to sign Harper. And the four players I listed, you could have for the same money: Michael Brantley, Andrew Miller, Joe Kelly, and I went with Steve Pierce. You could have those same four players for the same $40 million that Harper may or may not cost. And so say you go with Harper rather than the other four, now you still have to go get those other four, you know, to fill those holes on the teams. I just, you know, to clog up your payroll with a guy like Machado, when you have, at least from an offensive perspective, when you have a highly serviceable third baseman, is just absolutely insane to me. And
well, look, to get back to Chris's point, it's look, the Yankees are not some shitty organization. They're not the Devil Rays, right? They're not I mean, the Cincinnati Reds, right? This is a program that has evolved since Steinbrenner Sr. stepped down and eventually passed. They have employed more business people. They have stayed super consistent with Cashman, and they've been competitive, you know, mostly for a really long period of time. And I'm talking about my, you know, I'm 35 years old, so during my, you know, fandom as a baseball fan since I was like 8 to 10 years old. It is shocking to me that, because I feel like this is a foregone conclusion, that Machado's going to sign with the Yankees, not for performance and, you know, improvement in war or the power numbers, OPS, RBIs, home runs. And he's not necessarily viewed as a slam dunk marketable athlete. You know, he is a douchebag. You know, Chris, you characterize him as having problems. I would just say he's a douchebag. So to say that Machado to the Yankees is going to happen, basically, and I agree with you, Chris, boiling down to petty jealousy over your biggest rival winning the World Series, to me is laughable. And maybe I'm giving the Yankees too much credit if that's really what's about to happen, because that's shocking. And it, to me, it's so clearly the wrong decision. Like, the Phillies have more to gain. Like, they can't get talent in Philly. You can. You're the Yankees. You already have talent. You already have Judge. You already have Stanton. You already have Didi's going to be back. I mean, you have talent up the ass. Philly can't get anybody unless they draft them. Of course Philly's going to overpay. Of course the White Sox are going to overpay. They can't generate that sort of draw in free agency. If they don't draft people, if they don't get the middling free agents, they can't improve on a large scale. So, of course, those teams are willing to do that. You're the Yankees. You don't need to do that. But yet you're about to, because of petty jealousy, because the Boston Red Sox just won the World Series. And I know I'm restating what Chris is kind of already saying, but to me it's like, it's mind-blowing. And, again, maybe I have to rethink my level of respect for the Yankees organization if this is really what's about to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we can go back and forth on it all day, you know, whether it's going to happen, whether it makes sense fiscally, you know, or strategically for the Yankees. But, you know, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I think we're at least a few days away from anything happening. And, you know, and maybe not before the 11th, before the arbitration things. Chris, is before we get to Harper, is Judge up for arbitration? Does his I forget the term for it.
Controllable years by the team? Team control?
Well, there's another, like a Super 2 player, or Chris Bryant got to arbitration really fast. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know if how long is Judge out from arbitration?
He has, I think, one more year of team control, if not two. I can't be exact. I have to look, but I know he's a free agent in 2023. And if he keeps putting up the numbers like he is, it wouldn't shock me if the Mookie Betts money that he's been getting is not far off, because I'm not comparing, you know, either of the two. I think Mookie Betts is a transcendent player, but I think Judge is maybe a notch below, but he could still get close to that amount of money. So maybe that's another reason why the Yankees are trying to, you know, maybe speed up the win process, because, you know, like I've said with Andujar, if the Yankees were a win-now team 2 years from now, Andujar would be perfect. But because the Yankees have to win now, because the Red Sox won and the Yankees had all the expectations from 17, which I've said now for over a year and a half that those expectations hurt that Yankee team this year, because that 17 Yankee team, completely different. That was a team with no expectations, a young team. Everybody was having fun. It just had a different aura. But in 18, you had expectations. You had Stanton. You had what Cashman did during the trade deadline, getting all those extra guys with Happ and Britton, signing Neil Walker and so on. So, you know, it becomes that, you know, the expectations were too high for the 18 team, and you wonder if it's going to be like that this year and beyond, because unless they get pitching and they change their approach at the plate, it's not going to change what's happened in terms of what they do in the playoffs, because home runs, living and dying by the home run, does not win you a World Series. It does not advance you far in the playoffs. Point proven. Houston and Red Sox the last 2 years. Kansas City in 15.
Right. No, and I hear you. Just to go back on one thing in there, though, I would say that Mookie Betts is a better all-around player than Aaron Judge, but I just from a raw power hitting standpoint, I just think Judge is going to consistently mash year after year. Mookie kind of fell off a cliff as far as the power went. You know, I think he had like four home runs after the All-Star break, or maybe it was six or so, but nothing like his first half. And I just feel like Judge is just consistently, you know, hammering away, you know, throughout the season. I know he got hit by a pitch and had the wrist thing, but I just don't know. I mean, who do you think Mookie is going to be more sustainable, you know, for the next decade? Because he's gone up and down. I mean, 2017 wasn't a spectacular year for him, and Judge almost was the MVP. Many thought he should have been.
Well, I think you're looking at two different players. I mean, you look at Mookie and you look at Judge. Judge is a bigger player, relies more on power. Mookie Betts is a little bit more of an athletic center fielder. I mean, they play two different positions. And I'm pretty sure when Mookie's a free agent, he'll also be younger than Judge as well. So you can kind of say, okay, does that two-year gap really, you know, make a difference? But, I shouldn't say that, you know, the bias is there, because I should be saying Judge is better, but there's just something about watching Mookie and what he does and the times I've watched him. You know, maybe it's the less strikeouts, maybe it's the more, you know, speed that he does, and the fact that he can really, you know, cause fear into pitchers in terms of being on the base paths, where Judge is really not that much of a burner. But, and, you know, both being at the plate, you don't want to face either of them, especially a guy like Judge, where he can fall behind 0-2, but then he works you. It felt like every time he was up at the plate, it was a 3-2 count.
Yeah, I'm just – let me put it this way, and I'll let – Jeremy, I'll let you weigh in. You know, let me just ask the question this way. If you're going to have one player for 10 years, who's gonna give you the most throughout that 10 years? And I can't argue Mookie's defensive prowess, you know. And you know, that should be valued, but I just, from a consistent offensive standpoint, I almost want to lean towards Judge, but Jeremy, go ahead.
Well, big bodied guys typically don't have the same length of their career just because more weight, more problems that can go wrong. And Judge is so fucking big. And I'm big. I'm 6'5". And I played baseball in college. I constantly had problems with my back, shoulder, and you know, knees and feet. And I'm only 35 years old, and I'm not a professional athlete. So, and I know that that falls on deaf ears. But I'm just trying to relay the point that big-bodied athletes tend to break down quicker than smaller athletes. Mookie's so, and I've constantly called him this. He's a NBA point guard playing right field at Fenway Park. He's so fucking athletic. He's so light on his feet. I mean, he wears converted basketball sneakers as cleats. And cheap hypothetical there, cheap example. But to me, it's not even close when you also consider, and I'm regurgitating Chris's point, Mookie's 2 years younger. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent in his calendar 28 year, whereas Judge is going to be 30. So to me, it's not close. If you're talking about a 10-year window, if that's the hypothetical, in 10 years, Mookie's going to be 35, and in 10 years, Judge will probably be out of the league at 37. So, one other point I wanted to bring up, Mookie in 2017, in his last year of team control, he made $950,000. In his first year of arbitration, he made $10.5 million. So he's going to make 15, I think, to 18 million. 15 might even be low. He's going to make 17.5 this year in arbitration two. And then arbitration three, he may set a record if he's still like an MVP candidate. So he's going to make a tremendous amount of money despite the fact that he's quote unquote not a free agent. Like, I look at the next 2 years for Mookie as like 2 years, $35 million at least. Judge has another year of team control. He's going to make that $950,000 this year. And then he's going to jump into arbitration, and he's going to follow the Mookie Betts formula. He's going to be a $10 million per year, then a $17 million per year, and then God knows what in 2022 in his final year. And I think that, you know, and I know we've moved on from Machado, but I think that's also a factor when you're talking about why would you sign Machado? You already have that guy, and you're going to burn money that's going to be allocated to him. And I know he's under, you know, he's got a team controlled year, and then he's got 3 years of arbitration where he's going to be a Yankee unless they trade him. But he's Aaron Judge. He's already, you know, in that MVP candidate year after year. He's going to continue to project that way. So you need the money available for this guy. You do. And, you know, but so hopefully the contract details also help highlight what's kind of happening with these two players.
I think Judge could sign early, especially if he's not going to hit free agency, you know, until age 30. I mean, if it's an astronomical
31.
Deal. Yeah, I mean, if it's an astronomical deal, you know, close to 400 or better, I mean, I don't.
But that's not how early contracts work. I mean, Pedroia signed one. Who else signed one that I'm spacing it on? But early contracts work as you're gonna make more than you would in arbitration, but you're also gonna give some back for the immediate financial certainty that comes with an early contract. You're not gonna see top of the market without getting to free agency. You're just not. So. And that's one of the issues with Mookie. They offered him a deal, or they started to talk about a deal, and it wasn't top of the market. And Mookie was going to bet on himself, and it appears he's going to be right, but you're just not going to do that. Pedroia's was for six years, $60 million. And if he didn't take that, he would have made more. He would have made maybe twice that amount earlier in his career, but he took the contract, took the guaranteed lifetime financial, certainty, and then he signed one of the worst contracts in recent memory. But So he kind of lucked out where he took the early contract and then signed again. But that's just not how these – he's not going to get $400 million without getting to free agency in 2023.
Well, Miguel Cabrera would be a relevant example. His extension was – he had, I think – 30 or 40 remaining over, I think, 2 years, and then he signed a $252 million deal, which brought it closer to 300, and I don't know if Stanton's deal had been signed at that point, but, I mean, he was basically the second highest-paid player of all time, and he was – he must have been 31, 32. You know, that was one of the last real stupid contracts, but – Dombrowski threw a shit ton of money at him, and he took it, you know. And so, I mean, I don't know. Chris, what are your thoughts?
I mean, to go back to your point with the Tigers, I think that was a team that was so desperate to win. I mean, Dombrowski, for all the trades that he's done in the past and, you know, trying to win now, you know, he saw a chance to try to continue that win streak with Detroit. And, you know, a lot of the contracts they gave, they're going to be – you know, I can't see them fully rebuilding until they find a way to get underneath that Cabrera contract. It's going to be hard. You know, I mean, that's why the Marlins getting away from the Stanton contract, I think, was able to kind of turn that team around in some way and allow them to fully reboot, start from the ground, you know, put their shovel in the dirt, and then try to rebuild this thing. And, you know, the Marlins farm system went from 31st to, I think, 19th, and there's still chances for them to get a little bit better. They signed a kid, Victor Mesa, and his brother, Victor Mesa Jr. So I think that's going to help out the farm system even more. But going back to your point, I mean, you know, these big time contracts really restrict teams. And that's why we've seen a lot of 1-2 year deals this year. And, you know, a guy like Nelson Cruz, who the last, 4 years has hit over, I think I saw a stat since 2014, he's hit over 200 and something home runs. And for everything he's done, he's been healthy. He's been a solid guy, taking away the PED usage. And, you know, he's great for the clubhouse, and he's helped your team win. He shows up to play. But he was rewarded a one-year, $14 million contract with an option in 2020. So, you know, teams really do value the age and what you've done in terms of your previous couple years with health and such. And Judge being 30, that could hurt him. Mookie Betts being young, and if he still has the athleticism in center field, or not center field, right field, pardon me, and has a still above positive war, that can net him a lot of money. That's why Hayward got as much as he did from the Cubs. Yes, his bat had projection, although it hasn't really showed, but his defense was superb. So the Cubs gave him that amount of money as he received from them because of his defense. Teams pay for defense.
That was a dumb contract, though. I mean, he's a $10-12 million player right now. You know, I mean, he was benched in the World Series a couple years ago, and I mean, the Cubs want Bryce Harper. They want, and I mean, there was discussions about it last week, but you got Hayward making $27 million a year. You got Darvish making $22 million a year for five more years. Lester has another year or two left of 20-something million. Like, I mean, for as brilliant as Epstein's been, he's made some really bad missteps in the last couple of years with, you know, the Cubs. And with also, and you mentioned Nelson Cruz, he's 38 years old. And I mean, Judge, if he's around, you know, age 36 or beyond, I would assume that's going to be a DH. But then again, you do have Stanton. I think he's got $260 million left over 9 years. So I can't have two DHs, I guess. But
the thing, though, with Judge and Cruz was never known as a defender. He was always that guy that was going to end up as a first baseman DH. That's why he was traded from Milwaukee to Texas, and he was able to be a DH/right fielder. He actually cost the Rangers that World Series in 2011 against St. Louis because he misplayed a ball in right. And he wasn't even supposed to be out there, you know, from the get.
But I mean,
that's a whole other story.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
you know, the fact is that if Judge is a capable defender, he'll get paid and it'll help him in the long term. But as Jeremy said, big guy, wear down, the injuries come up, and Judge has already had a couple, and if he can stay away from the injury bug, he'll get paid. But if he doesn't, I mean, as long as Cashman's at the helm, he doesn't care about the Judge's corner and him being a fan favorite. If it doesn't equal the plan of what the Yankees are going to do in the long term and prolong this winning that the Yankee fans and people demand, he's going to say, you know what? Go get it from another team, because it doesn't equal success, because no team has won a World Series paying a guy $300 million. That's the biggest stat ever in baseball. No team has won paying a guy $300 million.
Or over 200, actually, with the exception of 2009 with your Yankees there.
Yeah, the
Yankees. But actually, with a bat making more than 200, because the Red Sox just did it with Price. And I'm a huge believer of spending on pitching, you know. And you're starting to see some contracts working out again for guys over the age of 30. I mean, Kluber still, he's not making huge money. He signed a team-friendly deal, but even if it was for huge money, he's still a guy that's producing. Max Scherzer is a guy that's producing. David Price just had, as much as I hate to admit it, and I don't have mouthwash anywhere near me, had one of the better seasons of his career, you know. So I'll spend on pitching for sure, but, you know, with the bat, as you were just saying, the value just isn't there. Let's get, because we're pushing an hour now, so let's just get 10 minutes or so on Harper. Jeremy, we'll lead you off here. Dodgers, Nationals, and he's meeting with the Phillies today. So, all right, well, it was announced today that he's meeting with the Phillies. So, what are your thoughts?
I still think he's going to go back to the Nationals. And I think what he's doing is trying to find out what, you know, what's going to be the highest offer. And if it's enough to go, then he'll go. And I think the Dodgers are a real possibility. They have the money. They're contending. So he's going to a team that's gone to back-to-back World Series, and he's going to be, you know, potentially that guy that gets him over the top. They've already cleared the spot in the lineup with the trade from, I think, 10 days ago. So they've clearly done the things they feel like they need to do to get him. Wouldn't surprise me if he goes there. I feel like he's only going to go to Philly if Machado doesn't. They haven't been shy about wanting Machado. And then, you know, I think the Nationals are still a fit. They've offered him 10 years, $300 million. I don't think, whether they're posturing or not, I do believe that if he comes to them and says, I'll take the 10 and 300, I think he will do it. And then one final note, just on a grand scheme. Baseball is the teams generally, the front offices generally, are trying to create a shift back towards fiscally responsible contracts. And that's why there's been, for 2 years now, there's been absolutely no free agent activity. Teams are not going to overpay. They're not going to create more term on the contracts than they have to. And with these two players, it seems like there's going to be exceptions once the contracts are finally announced. But it's amazing to me that baseball has seemingly got their act together and said, look, we're going to as a corporation, top to bottom, we're going to get responsible here with these contracts. Teams just aren't overextending themselves. It's amazing to me that we're now flipped the calendar year and there's been like six signings and like three trades. I mean, I read a stat that there's still 214, you know, veteran free agents available. It's crazy. So that's kind of, you know, to mix in my Harper and then my comment that I wanted to make, just generally speaking.
I picked the Nationals, and I think they're very much live, you know, in this, you know, race for him. Chris, before you weigh in, let me create an angle for you. If Machado does go to the Yankees, what are the chances the Phillies miss on both?
See, the problem with the Phillies is that they started their rebuild. They cut down. They did as much as they could for this offseason and then maybe the Trout and Mookie Betts, you know, offseason when they're both free agents, if they get there. But if they strike out on both Machado and Harper, it is not good, because what's happening right now, the Eagles just won a Super Bowl, and now they're back in the playoffs with the help of Nick Foles. The Sixers are becoming at least a pretty decently top three, top four team in the East. And the Phillies are lagging behind. And you know that's not something they want to hear, because those fan bases like Boston, like New York, they demand winners. And the Phillies have not been since the late Roy Halladay and those group of Cliff Lee and, you know, the old guys with Howard and Utley. So if they strike out with Machado, they have to hit on Harper, because if they don't, I'm sorry, but I just don't see that team as a division-winning, you know, NL East crown team, just because they really don't have that one star player on the offensive side. Mikel Franco has not taken that next step. Kingery's too young. They traded away one of their top guys in Crawford to get Segura. So they're lacking that one power person, that one head star. They don't have that.
Reese Hoskins, though, don't forget him.
He's not a star yet, though, Terry. He's nowhere close to Harper. And he's got to prove that he can play. You know, he's moving from left field to first base. He's a much better player at first, which I don't get why they signed Santana and put him out there and left, but that's a whole other story. But, I mean, Hoskins is a nice player. I'm not comparing him to Harper by any means. He could eventually maybe be a star, but he's not even close to the Harper Machado level. Not even.
Yeah, and I wasn't saying that, but, I mean, I just think there's some serious potential there. Okay, and it's just kind of curious to me that they could potentially miss on both, especially when their owner came out and said that they would, quote, spend money and possibly be a little stupid about it. And
stupid money.
Yeah, so I don't know. Here's another thing I want to mention. Jeremy brought up the Dodgers kind of clearing some payroll as well as a spot in their outfield for Harper. And I was thinking back, and maybe you guys will come up with a name, but looking at the Dodgers and the Giants specifically, when was the last time they signed a big-time free agent? They've had some homegrown ones, you know, Kershaw, Bellinger. They've made some trades. We've seen players come in that way. But when was the last time either team actually signed one for big money?
Well, define big money. Like, how much are we talking?
Nine figures.
Nine figures?
So 100 or more.
100 or more. Trying to think.
Brown, they signed Brown to the first $100 million deal in history.
Yep.
And they took on Crawford, and who Gonzalez was $100 million, and Gonzalez, who I think was a $100 million deal, although they didn't sign him. They traded for him from the Red Sox.
Right. But the thing,
and they signed Greinke to a pretty big deal.
Yep.
And Kershaw.
Well, Kershaw was homegrown, though, or at least came up with them.
He was drafted by them.
But the, you know, and the, I'm glad you mentioned the Crawford Gonzalez Beckett thing, but they didn't choose the Dodgers. They ended up with the Dodgers via a trade that they had no control over. So I've heard in the past, and maybe this is relevant, maybe it's not relevant at all, but California is one of the highest income tax states for pro athletes. So I don't know if that's part of it, or I don't know, but I just noticed with those two teams, there's no recent relevant player signing a nine-figure deal with either team. So that's just kind of in the back of my mind when I'm thinking about Harper going to the Dodgers. Did I lose you guys?
No.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm just way out in right field. I don't know, but you know, it was just something I thought of. You know, with the Angels, they had the Pujols deal, and you know, they kept extending Trout, but
and then they signed C.J. Wilson, and they got Josh Hamilton, and they made all these other stupid signings.
Right.
I mean, all it takes is one owner to, you know, offer one of them, you know, a max deal, but it's also the, you know, in terms of the player having to take it. And, you know, like we mentioned with Machado, he wants to be a Yankee, so more than likely that's going to happen. But it's, if Machado signs for less money, does that then put more pressure for Boris and Harper to then sign for more? Because you, in some ways, both these players are going to dictate the market for when Mookie and Trout, if they get to free agency, because I don't see the Angels re-signing Trout, and I don't see the Red Sox re-signing Mookie. So does that dictate how much money they're going to get? Now, will the market be different in the next, you know, couple years? It very well could. We've seen the market change from year to year due to analytics and others, so it's all a crapshoot, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I think Machado has to take the highest deal for that to play into Mookie's favor. If we're gonna, you know, if Mookie's gonna get a record breaking deal, but also he's, you know, same year as Trout, so one of them, you know, potentially a record breaking deal. I also saw a quote today from, or maybe it wasn't a quote, but Boris had basically. Yeah, Boris was quoted as saying he's selling Bryce Harper to owners, not front offices, because he's seeking a record-breaking contract. He wants, and Boris has said this for a couple of years now, he wants Bryce Harper to be the highest-paid player in the history of the game. So, I mean, that's where they're at right now, and I don't know if they're going to get it, to be honest with you. I don't think they'll get it from the Nationals. It has to be the Phillies, doesn't it? I mean, really, if he's gonna break the record, I mean, they're the one team that's been on record saying we're willing to spend stupid money.
Yeah, it's going to be the Phillies, and like I alluded to earlier, I feel strongly that shitty programs like the Phillies and the White Sox have to do that, because they aren't going to be able to attract Steve Pierce for 1 year, $6.5 million. Or, you know, like the Yankees have continually re-signed Brett Gardner. They have to overpay because they're traditionally losers. And so how do you get a generational talent? You overpay for him, and maybe you got to get stupid about it, which I think was part of the quote from the Phillies owner. So I do think if you're going to see that sort of like crazy deal, it's going to come from one of those two teams. And I do think the Dodgers and the Yankees are willing to spend. I just don't think they feel the need to overdo it, especially because with those two teams, again, the Yankees need pitching, and the Dodgers are a pretty good roster if they do nothing. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, they're getting Seager back, and you know, which is probably why they're not pursuing Machado. But yeah, and also another,
they're probably going to win the NL West. The Dodgers really don't have any competition. The Giants are more than likely going to rebuild because I can't see them being a contender. You have the D-backs trying to reload and retool at the same time. The Padres, I've stated that they have the best farm system in baseball. They have all the young talent, but unless they put it together and get a starting rotation, they're never going to compete. So, you know, that whole division is so topsy-turvy. And the Rockies, this is their last year because Nolan Arenado is a free agent, and I don't know if they're going to be able to re-sign him. So that the Dodgers could very well win the division again, and depending on how it, you know, works with who they face and so on, they could make the World Series for a third year in a row. Now, could they win it? You mean you make it there three times, you would hope that third time you win it. But then again, the American League has shown now that they are such a more superior league than the National League on multiple fronts.
You could be right. Don't count out the Cardinals, though. I think they could potentially, you know, if the stars align, you know, make a run for it. But, yeah.
I agree with that.
Maybe the Cubs. And Anthony Castrovince, I'm not too familiar with him. He actually thinks there's a good chance Harper could go to the Cardinals, and no one's talking about that right now. So I don't know if that was him just being bold or what. But
no, he's a respectable guy. No, he knows he's good.
Yeah.
I see him on Hot Stove and MLB Tonight. He's respectable.
Yeah, and I've seen him enough as well. The segment today was they were pretending it was a year from now, and he was telling them everything that happened in 2019, and he said, Harper went to the Cardinals. He picked the Yankees to win the World Series, if that, you know, gives you any delight.
No, not really. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
I don't think so either, but, and I'm, you know, I have my concerns with the Red Sox as well, you know, if I'm being completely honest. But one last question, for you, Chris, if you could go back 2 months, however long it was, would you nix the Paxton deal and try to get Robbie Ray instead?
See, they're both the same player. I know Robbie Ray and Paxton have the same amount of control left. They both are high leverage, good stuff lefties that can get a lot of strikeouts, but both have an injury history being able to stay on the mound. Now, I don't know what the offer would have been and what we would have to give up to get Robbie Ray, but I'm fine with what we gave up getting Paxton. I said it before. I'll say it again till the cows come home.
Well,
you know, what?
Robbie Ray's controllable for 4 more years. I think Paxton okay, only for years. 2.
Okay, so it would have been even more that we would have had to give up. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think the D-backs, in a lot of ways, they didn't feel the need to give up Robbie Ray unless we were giving up everybody plus our firstborn son. So to give up what we did for Paxton for 2 years, I think was a deal that you have to make because let's say, for example, the Yankees don't get Paxton, okay? Let's say they wait and they're like, okay, we want to wait to see what happens with Corbin. The Yankees don't get Corbin. He signs with the Nationals. The Mariners could very well have traded Paxton to name me a team that needed a pitcher, whichever team.
Houston.
Or they could have held, yeah, exactly, Houston. Or they could have held on to him and then said, you know what, Yankees, you didn't get your guy Corbin. You don't like Keuchel. We know you don't like him. So we want more from you because now we smell your desperation. Cashman felt the need to do it now, just like he did with Tulo. Get your guy now in the minute. Don't hesitate because if you do, it could bite you in the ass later on. So getting Paxton, I'm fine with.
Okay, fair enough. I love Robbie Ray, so maybe there's
I know you do.
Yeah,
you love him a lot.
There's some bias, I guess. But all right, any final thoughts, Jeremy, before we wrap?
Nope.
No. Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for coming on. It was good to shake off the rust, and I think we'll probably skip Sunday, but maybe middle of next week, whatever works. I'm pretty wide open, so I'm assuming something will probably happen by then, but we'll figure it out when the time comes, I guess. But thanks again, and we'll be in touch and bash each other on text and whatever.
All right, guys. Have a good evening.
Have a good night.
Good night, guys.
Episode, I don't even know what episode this was, probably about 110. It was good to get back on and talk some baseball. Jeremy and I, had a nice back and forth. So I hope you guys are entertained by that. I mean, we're entertained by it, and you know, we love to debate. So Chris had to play the monkey in the middle. But, anyway, like I was just saying, we'll keep an eye on the market. Things are getting pretty hot and heavy. I don't know how much longer the Machado saga can be dragged out, but Harper is meeting with the Phillies this week, I think, in Vegas. So maybe that market finally picks up some steam, and we'll see. And then as far as the Red Sox go, probably, I mean, hopefully they're – we didn't talk anything about the Red Sox, actually, but, you know, hopefully another bullpen arm. And once the arbitration stuff plays out, maybe that finally gets dealt with. So we'll keep an eye on that in the next couple of weeks or so. Nothing will be imminent until that stuff does get sorted out. So thanks again. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll probably be back next week. Take care.
I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I sleepwalk through the days when there's a West Coast swing. Married to the TV and the radio. For tickets in October, I'd give anything. Still paying Red Sox debts from long ago.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.